with us. He is a three-time yes. NAACP award winner, member of Second City Training Center, a graduate there, and is in a new play called Disinherit the Wind by Matt Chait, directed by Gary Lee Reed. Tell me what attracted you to this piece and what it's about.
Okay, very well, thank you. Specifically, what attracted me to the piece was the fact that it was going to, well, strategically, it allowed me to perform in a role that I'm not very often allowed to perform in or be portrayed in. In other words, as a an adult black man, I have found myself being portrayed or being cast in more than not non-professional roles, non-white collar roles. So the play in itself allowed me to being in a role where I could demonstrate some a superior status as well as some very, very academia and profound verbiage. In other words, I'm speaking in terms of science and microbiology and very, very astute as a chairman of a microbiology department. So
okay,
what attracted
so let me,
was ability.
Let me just make sure I understand this correctly, Smokey. So finally, the directors and the powers that be realized that you are a trained thespian and not to be boxed into one particular characterization. Don't stereotype me. I've got a brain, and I use a lot more than 10% of my brain.
Absolutely. Very well said. Very well said. And, you know, we artists, that's why it's so important to write and create your own work so that you can write and create things that represent you and images that need to be redefined or need to be rediscovered, need to be portrayed, as you said, that I'm not just in this box. I can play more than three of your stereotypical characters. And that's why it's important to have the ability to be a writer, to be a creator, to have a camera in your hands, to have a venue to get up there and speak and say something. So strategically, yes, that's the first thing that attracted me to the role. In terms of subject matter, it dealt with a subject matter, I think, as long as we evolve as human beings, hopefully with wisdom, we begin to be concerned about who we are and where do we come from and where are we going as an entity, as a source. I believe, personally, that the energy within us, the soul, the spirit, the God within us, will always be alive. It will never die. We are housed right now in this physical shell, right now. But beyond that, this source, this spirit, this soul within us is only part of an inimitable force, a much greater force that we are all come from. Be that as it may, the idea of, well, are we all part of something and we come from science, come from something because it's scientifically related? Or are we all part of something because it's mysteriously related to something that we don't know, which means we have to have faith to rely on it or to accept it? So the idea, do we come from molecules or do we come from a greater source that created us, this spiritness, this spirit consciousness?
I am so goofy. I'm listening to you and I got my hand up like I'm in class.
You know, we use me on Facebook Live
so people could see how ridiculous I could be, because I could hear them now going up there, mother, what you raising your hand for? the only reason that we're not doing Facebook Live, people, is because the engineers are not here, and I have to keep the show rolling. They don't show up, I'm not just going to sit here with dead air. Okay, look, you just can't see me, but I'm sitting here holding up my hand like, okay, Professor Smokey. This is my take on it. I believe that we are created from the universe. It's just entirely too much energy to put into 7 billion people on one little blue dot to not come from an astronomical. astronomical, omnipotent ball of energy. I also believe that same ball of energy created those molecules and created all of those, if you want to say, you know, the prehistoric animals and the man. I think it was the reason why the dinosaur and man weren't on the planet together. The first they got them little short arm like CeeLo, he clapped like a dinosaur, you know, and that's not supposed to be right. You're supposed to be able to get your arms around and share some love. We got to take care of this planet. I believe that the omnipotence of God, the force, the deity, the energy. I mean, when you feel like, when you're on stage, let me ask you this. When you're on stage and you know that you know you are giving a killer performance, do sometimes you feel like you're having an out-of-body experience?
Absolutely. If you are lucky enough to get your point, to get to a point during your performance when you're being, as they say, ever-present, you're just being present in the energy that's happening. You're just present in the experience that's happening. Yes, you have lines, and yes, you have blocking. We're not talking about that. We're talking about you relating to the energy that's happening. A lot of people call that, oh, yeah, I got filled with this adrenaline. I got this adrenaline rush. Yeah, well, you get an adrenaline rush because you get touched. You excite that energy, that source within you. And one of the things that theater does for you, unlike any other art form, is that, as you said initially, it's the beauty of live. You are live and you're interacting with other living things. And so the energy that's exchanged is just that. It's exchange. It's an avenue, a road. They're giving, you're giving. And this exchange of energy is just creating such a rush, such a exciting, the God-like force within you that, yes, it's like an out-of-body experience because you find yourself riding a wave. You find yourself in such a moment that is not of your control. It's a live reaction, and the adrenaline is taking you on such that it is an out-of-body experience because you, once you leave that stage, you can't go backstage. You can't go in your car on the way home and go get it. You can't do that. You may
and
try
that's
to
why you, when you're
the
in
story.
The moment like that, I mean, you want it to last. You want it to last. I am, when you put it all out there on the stage, when you just leave it out there on the stage and you know that you did it, you know, I didn't want that moment to end. But then I knew the moment had to end because God was going to allow me to have, it wasn't going to ever be that moment ever again. That's going to be my memory that I could get to do it again if I'm blessed and because we get to continue to do that. You know, we've been talking about energy and, you know, the forces. So I'm getting the feeling that you believe in reincarnation.
Yes. Mother Love, absolutely, I believe in reincarnation. I believe in reincarnation. Yes.
Let me ask you this. Do you believe that when you get reincarnated, that the force and the energy gets stronger with each reincarnation?
Yes, I do. The reason why I believe it gets stronger, because I believe, similar to, let's just say, similar to school or public school, I believe we go through this life experience to obtain certain knowledge, to attain certain studies. And as we go through our education of life's journey, we, you know, graduate to the next level of education we need to learn as a complete life force to make us ready for whatever the ever after is going to be. And so a lot of times, just like in school, sometimes you don't get all your studies one time around. Sometimes some people got to repeat a grade. Sometimes they have to repeat a course because they didn't get all of the lessons that they were supposed to learn. So we are reincarnated so that we can get all of the learning that we need to complete our journey as a life force to make us a viable entity in the thereafter, whatever that is. I also believe sometimes, you just as you have geniuses, you know, they know a lot and they don't need a lot of repeat classes or new classes. Maybe they've got all their lessons. It's their turn now to give lessons. So sometimes we repeat a life, not because of what we need, but because of what we need to give to to somebody
else. I believe in reincarnation wholeheartedly, completely, because there's no reason for me to have these thoughts and feelings and recognizable smells in places that I have never been, but I know that I've been there. They cannot tell me any different. I know that I know. And I was in this part, in this body, you know, and I'm telling the universe got a sense of humor, like everybody. You think about all the stuff that nature makes. I mean, you got to have a sense of humor to make a giraffe and a platypus and a mother love body. Mm-hmm. Come on.
Absolutely.
And that takes genius.
Yes. And it takes trial and error.
No.
Which is why.
That's why we get reincarnated, because we start thinking for ourselves. We're like, oh, yeah, I could do that.
That's right. First time it went wrong. You got to do something differently this time. Also, I believe there's something with deja vu. You know, deja vu I've been here before. I've done this before. Yes, you probably have. You know, how often do we see young children or even newborn babies as they come into our lives? And right away we recognize, oh, my goodness, this is an old soul.
I met this little boy. His name is Obama. He is from Nigeria. He got to be like maybe four. This little kid is just a ball of light. And, you know, one of my favorites is watching newborns until they start talking. And you watch a baby. Mm-hmm. And you watch, they're always looking up at the corners in a room. I don't know how a baby can follow the corners in the room. And I was told that newborns, up until they're starting to form whatever language they're going to speak that they're around, that they're talking to the angels and the spirits and the ancestors coming to the corners, giving them knowledge. Because how else would a baby know to cry because they're hungry or they're wet?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. How else would they know what else to do when they do what they do to let you know what they need?
What they need.
Again.
And how do we know the difference? When my baby would cry, I would know if he was wet, if he was hungry, if he just wanted me to pick him up. I knew what his cry when he was sleepy, when he was hungry, and when he would just want to sit there and just stand there and cry because he thought I was going to give him his way.
Yes. Yes, we learned that.
That's what I know, that what you do is, and all of the thespians and the directors and the producers and the, you know, the set decorators and the costumers, I mean, the lighting people, all of those careers are important because we got to work as a team. You know, I tell people, you know, what we got to do is work like we're working on a movie set. My job is no more important than your job. I mean, if what I do on camera is not going to be smart enough, well enough for them to edit a good project and put a good score under it, what good is that if the team is all not working?
Absolutely. And what good is it if I'm not?
A job.
Right. And it's about collaboration. And that's what you're speaking about. 10 people doing different jobs, but together they're collaborating in one project, which is what we need to do as human beings, communicate and collaborate, working together on one project.
And it's not that complicated. And look, and what, I mean, it's sad to say, but what better catalyst and environment do we have than the state of our country right now in pooling us together as the people of the United States so that we are not put in a position to have to be ruled by demagogues who just want to ruin people just for the sake of ruining the country? That's not helping anybody. It is galvanizing people, though.
Very much so. And the arts being a venue and a medium to get that out and to be able to get that out in, quote unquote, palatable medicines, which is what the arts does, which is what your comedy does, which is what theater does. It educates and it motivates in an acceptable fashion. And then hopefully we can take that home and have more discussions, have more blogs that will allow us to motivate ourselves in a more positive front. To bring people together,
and not
that's the only
thing. So fearful, not be so fearful of one another to the point. Well, first of all, we don't have to be fearful of one another, period. You know, mm-hmm. you know how they tell you women, if you see a bunch of black kids, a bunch of black boys and not black girls walking down the street, walk across the street. No, I'm going to walk up. Well, I'm going to walk across the street. These are children.
Mm-hmm.
I know how to talk mm-hmm. to some teenagers. Come on, please. I'd walk right mm-hmm. up there through them. And, you know, mm-hmm. excuse me, baby. You know, and you know what they do? They move out the way. When you talk
yes.
to young people like they're human beings, you know, and you don't yes. talk at them and down to them and be rude and disrespectful to them, those children will open up to you like a budding flower.
Amen.
I was on a movie set the other day, and I went to do something. I was telling you, Spirit stopped me and told me, go tell these people about how to work this business. And I was like, okay. They came around me, smoke. It was just really, really something. And it was just to put something into them. You know, that was like mm-hmm. the best 10 minutes they probably could get, like right then and there. And these are young people who are in the entertainment industry. And I'm telling them, you learn everything you can about what goes on a movie. Find out. They didn't know who the Foley guy was. They didn't know what a set designer was.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so just telling them certain things like that.
And that's what's so great now. That's what we need in terms of conversations like that being shared with the youth or just other people that really have a desire to learn. And what we need is more conversations like that to help demystify the business. Because before I got involved in the business, because I've also worked the technical side of the industry, I was a union lighting technician. Matter of fact, I've just retired from Yahtzee Local 728 as a union, lighting technician.
Mm-hmm.
And over the last 30, 40 years, the entertainment industry, especially the movie production industry, has been very, very mystified. Information wasn't shared. How do I get in the business? How do I become an extra? How do I become a camera person? How do I get on the set? And it takes conversations like yourselves. It takes more programs where professionals like ourselves can introduce the layman to the road to achievement. And it's not that it's anything mystical. And it's not that it's anything beyond us. It just takes an interest and an avenue of how to go get it. And they are eagerly going to go get it now, which is why we have so many new young creators and filmographers and writers. And we need
to continue
to do that.
Now they're called content providers. We're not called writers anymore. We're content providers.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, we got so mm-hmm. much content. And then you see what happened at the Academy Awards. Did you see the Academy Awards last night?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. You got to tell me. You got to give me your take on it. I was laying on the floor.
Well,
like, really?
at this higher level, we're going to have that kind of a gaffe. If we want to assume it's that kind of a gaffe where I erroneously read the wrong information, first of all, it would seem to me that since we've already experienced that kind of gaffe before, where we had someone read the wrong information about a potential.
So you're talking about Steve Harvey and the Miss Universe contest.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they called it. They said, oh, this was a Steve Harvey moment. I told him, I said, it's going to turn into a meme. Trust me what I say. It's going to be, oh, they did a Steve Harvey. It's like when Creflo Dollar snatched his daughter up because she was acting a plum flu.
Yeah,
and remember the mother doing when they were down there protesting Black Lives Matter, and the mother went down there and snatched her son across the street by his book bag. Don't get your behind it on. I said, don't make me Creflo Dollar you. Do not make me book bag you. I will book bag you. On and then I was like, you just did a Steve Harvey, you know, and that's my, you know, hey, it is what it is. But that was it was just really something.
Go ahead. Yeah, for that to be able to happen again a second time leads one to believe, well, maybe was that done for humor? Was that done as a slight? And then you got to get into controversy and stuff, you know, and stuff like that. But it was. I'm glad that for all intent and purpose, the show didn't come to an end. Where you had a disclaimer after the fact. Oh, yeah, well, after the show went off, then the real winners came on stage.
No, they cleaned that up immediately. The guy came out and said, no, it's Moonlight, Bespin. Did you see Moonlight?
Yes, I got to. I'm so happy for Mashallah. Yeah, I'm so happy for Mashallah Ali, because what happened in that, it was a movie about relationships. You know, it was a movie about the effect of, you know, the effect how love is given and the positive effects that can happen from it. And that's universal, and that's what's genuine, and that's what needs the message to be inspired. But it's nice to see that being generated from something that's not gentrified and something that's not quote unquote unreal. Just a nice general story, just a nice, you know, touching story
and
about a relationship.
And it was going to take black men to tell that story. Only a black man could tell that story. That's not something like, you know, that you can just, oh, well, I can just perceive. No, you can't. You don't know what it's like to stand in a black man's shoes. And how could you possibly understand what it would be like to stand in a young black boy's shoes to finding his identity, who he is at his core, how he wants to love, whom he wants to love. You know, I don't care who you love or how you love, but that you love. Now, I do have an issue with the drag queens. I have an issue with the drag queens because, you know, I think it's like so unfair. You know, why you could put on your makeup better than I can? I'm about sick of you. And wear them tall shoes. Y'all make me sick. I tell them to their face.
Well, they got to say it. I tell them to their face.
I'm like, really?
Yeah.
You gonna walk better in shoes? I'm not. They can make me need a hip replacement just watching them walk. You know, it's gonna come a day. It's gonna come a day. You gonna be mad about that? Trust me, cause I'm mad about wearing my stilettos. But this is what you grow and you go. You grow and you keep going. Now tell people when the play is running and how they
can get tickets. Well, thank you very much. Yes, absolutely. The play opens on March 3rd. It's this coming week, as a matter of fact, and it runs until April 9th. It runs weekends, Fridays and Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Sundays at 3 p.m. at the Complex Theater. That's in Hollywood at 6472 Santa Monica Boulevard. That's right at the corners of Wilcox and Cole. They can get plays at our box office.
Tickets, you mean?
Yes. Let me get my flyer so I can get the exact telephone number. I'm still here.
Well, I have it right here. But go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Yes.
It's 323-960-4420. That's 323-960-4420. Or you can go to www.plays411.com/disinherit. And this is Disinherit the Win. And this is tell us about it again. Tell us about it. It's a courtroom drama about a renowned. Do you play the neurobiologist?
Well, no. As a matter of fact, it may have been a bit of a misprint in that Disinherit the Wind is a courtroom drama, and it deals with the mix of spiritualism with science in a University of California microbiology department. I play Dr. Jared Brown, who is the chairman of this microbiology department with head tenure. And apparently, my colleague, a teacher of mine who teaches microbiology, and he's a microbiologist, has decided that he's going to mix our teaching methods of life's creation with the ideas of spiritualism or spiritual consciousness, as if to say that the human being was created and is dictated by molecules and atoms, as opposed to the consciousness or spirit within. So the courtroom drama deals with him, the teacher who has been fired from the department.
He got fired because he wanted to teach something else, or he wanted to blend the two teachings of creationism and science. Okay, see, in my head, I don't understand how people can think you can have science without creationism. I just don't understand how that. I mean, the universe poured this into us. You know, people kill me when they say, "Well, I discovered Christopher Columbus. He discovered America. I discovered the polio vaccine." No, you just figured it out. It was there.
It was there the whole time. Exactly.
It was there the whole time. You just had to find the pieces of the puzzle and how to put them together. And then sometimes I think they find the pieces of the puzzle, they find the solution, but then the greed overtakes them. You know, when you talk about, you know, can I make more money with creationism or can I make more money with Darwinism? Can I make more money in science? And it comes down to that instead of what you said at the beginning, collaboration.
Yes.
And I want to be right.
And with
you
that,
can't be right, Smokey. You can't be right. You don't know what you're talking about creationism. Yes, I do. I know what I'm talking about. No, you do. And then the argument goes back and forth instead of sitting down and saying, okay, well, tell me how you feel and how you got to that. And I'm going to tell you how I feel. And we're probably going to get down to the same conclusion.
And that's exactly it. We will get down to the same conclusion, and we will conclude you were going the same way you were riding a bicycle. I was going the same way, and I was riding a moped. But by gosh, we're going to the same place. That's the bottom line. So there has to be some kind of similarity. It has to be some kind of understanding. And the great thing about that is that Dr. Jared Brown is, with the help of his daughter, is meant to listen more carefully, to allow the seed of collaboration. Let's look at this. Don't fight for your school because your school represents tradition. If the tradition is wrong, then what should you be fighting for? Are you fighting for the truth or are you fighting for tradition? And that's what this play is about. It deals in this courtroom drama. A man is fighting for the rationality. There must be, or perhaps there is, something else to be considered. And I'm not bucking the system, but you need to consider another idea. And at the end, there is growth and there is an arc in the play. And I will say this as well. Disinherit the Wind is a flip on the old play and film that Spencer Tracy starred in 1960. The original play was called, Inherit the Wind. But it deals with the same subject matter, because back then they were dealing with the idea of church being brought into the schools, like the mix between church and state. And that was a conflict that's still a viable conflict today, which is why we can't say the Pledge of Allegiance. We can't say under God. We can't say God bless you in some
circle. No, see, and to me, you know what? That's the biggest crock of baloney right there, because this is the way that this country was set up. Now, if you want to change the rules, then we need to start changing the Constitution. But so to me, you can't have it both ways. You know, we got to get on a similar path, and that's what's wrong. Because, you know, one thing about the arts, of the many things about the arts, is it keeps the truth in our face. It keeps the feelings and the compassion and sometimes the anger and sometimes the disenfranchisement in our faces, so that we don't, you know, just say, oh, well, this is just a play, so we don't forget. Every time I walk out of the theater, I feel different than I walked in. What is it that you want the audience to walk away from Professor Brown and from watching and experiencing Disinherit the Wind?
That, as we quote, nothing in the world, nothing in our existence is separate from us. We are all part of everything. So, you know, what we give in a positive, what we give in a negative, and everything else that's out there, we're all part of the same thing. We can't disinherit anything. You can't say that doesn't relate to us as a people. You can't say that doesn't affect us as a people. And we can't just say, especially as we evolve as humans, we can't say that it's just all this. We have to consider there is something else. There's got to be something else, because we are not meant to just wallow and carry into oblivion with no understanding
and
wisdom.
And we're not meant to be idle. It is my distinct pleasure. Again, the play is Disinherit the Wind. It starts March the 4th through April 9th.
Yes.
at the Complex Theater. You can get your tickets by calling 323-960-4420 or plays411.com/disinherit. Well, Mr. G. Smokey Robinson, it has been my distinct honor and pleasure to chat with you, as I would be remiss in my duties as the awesome talk show host I am and not thanking and making sure we thank Lucy Pollock for getting us together. She is absolutely fabulous.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Lucy. Thank you so much, Mother Love. And I just may tail off. When you order tickets right now, there's a promotion code. If you order tickets and you mention the letters TP and the number is 55, Thomas Patrick 55, you will get a 55% discount on your ticket prices.
Okay, wait, I'm trying to write that down. TP55.
Yes, okay. That's our.
And you'll get a 55% discount?
Yes, on ticket prices.
Well, thank you very much, sir. You're welcome. I wrote it down. May the universe continue to open up and conspire for your great success. God bless you, and I hope to see the play with you.
God bless you. Thank you, Mother Love.
You're welcome. Peace. And when we come back, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to have the beautiful and talented Denise O'Brien from Wings International, and she's going to tell us all about her fabulous travels. And